We're on.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome back to another Daf at Masechet Yevamos. We share from Masechet is sponsored by David and Paul at OML Construction.
All right, everybody, we are on Daf Yud Gimel, Yevamos. We're in the middle of the question of whether it's possible for a girl who's not yet bat mitzvah to have a baby. And that's a bit of a physical question as well as a legal until this point, because we had one Mishnah early on that said that of the various family relationships, it said that let's say that my brother was married to somebody related to me, so you can't do a yibum, but you could if that girl did miyun before my brother died. So doing miyun means that this girl is not yet bat mitzvah and she was not married off to her husband because of her father's authority, some other authority. And so then she has the prerogative to do miyun, and that will just annul the marriage. So it says here, obviously, since that's something that could only be done before she becomes bat mitzvah, there won't be any instance of miyun in a situation where the relationship between that girl and me is one where she is a mother, So, in other words, theoretically, my brother could be married to somebody, a young girl, and that girl have a baby, and then I marry that baby. Now, I wouldn't be interested in that in our world, doesn't come up, but that has a legal existence, that kind of a thing. In which case, my brother might be married to my mother-in-law. And so it says that if that's the situation, then if my brother's wife was married to her when he died, so then I can't do Yibam, obviously. But if he's married to her and before he dies, she does Miyun, so that means she annuls that marriage. So then in that case, well, he's not married to her. So what's the question of Yibam? The question is if he's also married to somebody else. Is there Yibam with the other wife? So in any case, that was the whole issue over there. And we're told that if my brother's wife does miyun, then it releases that whole relationship, and so the other wife is suitable to marriage, to yibum. And so that all point of that, this that claim that, but that can't exist when my brother's wife is related to me by being a mother of somebody, because once she's a mother of somebody, she can't be less than bat mitzvah. So last daf discussed some of the medical questions and the question about whether that's even possible or maybe dangerous for a girl who's not yet bat mitzvah to become pregnant. But in the meantime, what we were being told is that's a bit of a question about if it's possible or not. And our Mishnah takes the view that it's not possible. Because banim either harehim kesimanim or adifi me simanim, which means that clearly, if she's having a kid, she's at least bat mitzvah. So in any case, our daf starts with another slant on that. Another slant is Rav Zvid Amar ein banim below simanim. Rav Zvid Amar that it's not that having a baby is tantamount to being an adult, but it's saying that she can't have a baby without already having simanim. The word simanim is the word for pubic hairs, and that's going to be one of the indicators of puberty and of adolescence, which is what transitions somebody from being a kid to being a bar bat mitzvah. And so Rav Zvid is saying that the fact that she had a kid means that she must already have transitioned into adulthood. And then the Gemara says, well, if that's true, v'nivdok, So you should be able to find a hair. Somebody should check her and make sure that that's true. Mara says, not necessarily, because even if you don't, even if you can't find any hairs, chayshin and shema nashru, the hairs may not be there anymore. They may have gotten pulled out. And the Gemara says, "Hanicha lemandemer choshishin, el lemandemer ein choshishin mayikulamimber." But that itself was a machlokas. Whether failure to find hairs is supposed to be an indication of childhood, of prepubescence. The Gemara had a machlokas about that. If somebody seemed to be old enough, do you? And they seem to be at least an adolescent. But you don't. But somebody is checking. They don't find any hairs. So then, do you say, well, probably there were hairs there that are not there anymore, or do you say, no, you can take the absence of hair as an indication that the kid is not yet an adult. That's machlokas. So Rav Zavid seems to be saying that having a baby is clearly enough to evidence that there were hairs there, and even if you can't find them right now, that clearly those hairs are gone. The Gemara says that everybody would agree, according to Rav Zvid anyway, everybody would agree that that's something to be concerned about in the case of the trauma of childbirth. Even if somebody maintains that absence of hair is evidence of prepubescence, but that wouldn't be true if you have a baby where there would be, I don't know, the trauma to the area might account for why the hairs are missing. All of these things are very peculiar in our world because we define hair, the pubic hairs, as being a siman, right? That's the Hebrew word here, a siman. So what is it a siman, which means an indication or an indicator? What is it an indicator of? So if you had asked me, I would have said it's an indication of puberty, of adulthood, of sexual maturity, of reproductive fertility, of something like that. That's what we're trying to determine, is when a child transitions into adulthood, and that's what adulthood is defined by. That's also the way it seems from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that says, ki yazid ish al reyehu, ki yazid ish al reyehu, the Gemara takes the expression to mean ish mezid mazriya. And an ish is an adult, can produce children. And so you can't tell if somebody who hasn't tried to have children is able to have children, so that the pubic hairs are the indication of that. In our Gemara, it seems pretty clear that it's reversed, that we're using the hairs as the definers of adulthood, and children are supposed to be the indication of that. It's just backwards to the way we would think about things. So in any case, almost all of these things we don't really hold like on our daf. We just hold that the kid needs to be 12 or 13 years old, that's the age, and to have pubic hairs. But obviously other simanim would be effective. It's relevant to us also, because there are some things that we still need to have an adult for. In particular, the Gemara says that we don't really check so much for simanim. Let's say a kid becomes bar mitzvah, the very public event, and nobody's checking the kid's genitals to see whether he has pubic hairs there. And the reason why we can get away with that is because for most purposes, the Gemara says there's a rov, kol shehigiyah lechlal shanim, higiyah lechlal simanim. Anybody who's old enough, meaning the girl has already hit 12 years old or the boy's already hit 13 years old, most cases the kid already does have the hairs. And because that rov is there, that's why you can depend upon the rov unless the stakes are high. High stakes would be something like Yibam or Chalitza, like our daf. Low stakes would be something like serving as the chazan or getting an aliyah or counting in a minyan. Those are like low stakes issues where the kid has to be bar mitzvah. But since it's low stakes, so nobody's going to be checking, and you're just going to depend upon the fact that once the kid is, it's the 13th birthday, that probably the kid does have simane gadlus. Not sure exactly what to say if the kid knows that he has not really had those simanei gadlus, whether the kid should on his own know to hold off and refuse to be counted and anything. We just don't seem to insist on that. All right. In any case, that is our Gemara. Two dots. Keitzad potros tarsei. Now, we're finished with the whole question of gadlus and and puberty. And back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, way at the beginning, lists off the 15 relationships that would preclude Yibum. And then it says that the rule is that not only the Yibum with that girl herself, but also with any other wives that the brother-in-law happens to be married to, same kind of a thing. It precludes Yibum with any of those also with this brother. So let's say you have two brothers. One of them is married to four people. One of those people is related to his brother. And then this guy dies. So there's only one brother available, and that brother is related to one of the wives. So then the halacha is that not only can't there be a yibum with the wife that he's related to, that was the whole sugya from earlier in the parak, the aleha sugya, you also can't do any yibum for any of the other wives, even though there's no family relationship there. And you could have been able to do a yibum there, but you can't. That's called the tsaras erva. And that's what we're told in the first Mishnah, that tsaras erva is disqualified. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, and the truth is that the tsaras erva can herself preclude the tsara of the tsaras erva from yibum or chalitza as well, which means, let's say there are three brothers now, and one of the brothers married to multiple wives, of whom one is related to a brother. And then, but there's another brother there. And the other brother was, and another brother was able to do Yibum. Was able to do Yibum. And now what happens? And the second brother who was able to do Yibum now is no longer married. Then divorces, or the other girl dies. Is now only married to other women. But one of the women that the third brother is married to is somebody who was a co-wife along with the girl that the middle brother was married to. And then the third brother dies, and now the other brother is faced with the prospect of doing Yibum with all unrelated women, but one of them happened to have been the tzara of his relative from the first brother. And so what we're being told is that not only can't he marry that one, he can't marry any of the other ones, there's no Yibum for the tzara of the tzara either, the tzara's tzara. So that is what we're discussing now. Where do you know that's true? That the tzara of the tzara also was precluded from Yibum or Chalitza? Rabbi Yehuda the Amora is now suggesting, it's not like he's there or providing this as the source, he's suggesting what the Tanayim who said so are basing it on. He says, the Amarkra litzror. The word litzror has two rashes, and we focus on the fact that there's a kind of multiplicity of rashes there. Litzror, hatorah ribsa tzaros harbei. It refers to the fact that there could be tzaros of tzaros, and in all cases, not allowed to do yibum. Ravashi Amar, Ravashi says, I don't need a pasuk to tell me this rule. Svarahi, tzara maitaima asira dimimokam erva kaima. Why can't the tzara marry the, why can't you marry the tzara, meaning the tzara herself? You can't marry the tzara herself because once there's no yibum option, the tzara has the regular standing relationship of being a sister-in-law. And sister-in-laws, not in a situation of yibum, are automatically erva relationships. The only reason that there was any discussion of Yibum is because you have a mitzvah of Yibum. But if you didn't have the mitzvah of Yibum, then the sister-in-law relationship stands as being an erva relationship. And so now it says here, well, now that woman is now married along with other women to a brother who just died. So I can't marry my sister-in-law or the other sisters-in-law because of the same principle of tsara serva. So Rav Ashi says it's just a svara. that I don't need the fact that Saras Tzara is not is disqualified doesn't require any pasuk. Okay, two dots. The Mishnah then went on to say, Keitzad and Mesu, etc. The Mishnah said that even though all these relationships would disqualify the tsaros, the co-wives, but not if the erva, the woman who is the relative, terminated the marriage before the brother dies. And how could that happen? Three examples are given. Mesu, Omienu, O Nisgarshu. Mesu, Omienu, O Nisgarshu. Those are the three ways that you could have ended that my brother who just died was at one time married to my relative and now they're no longer married. How did that happen? Because either she died or they were divorced or she did miyun. So let's take a look. It says here, imeso, etc. The Gemara here is wondering, it says here, wait a minute. If they terminated that marriage and then my brother dies, now at the time that my brother dies, all of his wives or his one wife, it doesn't matter, is related to me, even though at one time my brother was married to a relative of mine, but now he's not married to a relative of mine. So the Mishnah says I can do Yibum or Chalitza with the other wives. So now our Gemara is bothered by this. It says, V'afilu kanas elubasov gireish. Does that mean that if my brother at one time was married to my relative and was simultaneously in a bigamous relationship with the other woman, so he had both wives. Now, if he died under those conditions, of course, that was what we said. There's no Yibum or Chalitza with any of his wives. For me, but let's say he then terminated the marriage with my relative. That's what it sounds like from our Mishnah, is that then I can do Yibum with the other one. In other words, it's not just that he was at one time married to my relative and now he's married to this other woman, but there was overlapping time when he was simultaneously married to both women in a bigamous relationship. And they were also going to say in that case that if he terminated the marriage with my relative, then I can do Yibum with his current wife? Viram Inu. But that seems to be against the Mishnah later on, because there's a Mishnah later on that gives you the following case. Gimel Achim, there were three brothers, let's say. Shnayim mehem nesuos shtei achayos v'yechad nasui nachris. Two of the brothers are married to two sisters, and one is married to some other woman not related, not in the family. The word Nachris, and all throughout Yevamos, doesn't have anything to do with Jewishness. It has to do only with familial relationships. So a Nachris just means a woman who's just not in the family. So it says, Gimel Achim, three brothers, two of them are married to two sisters, and one is married to a woman who's not in the family. Girei shechad mibalei achayos, ishto. One of the brothers who's married to one of the sisters divorced his wife. Umeis hanasui nachris. And now the other brother who was married to the non-relative dies. And so Yibum could be performed by either brother. But let's say the one who did the Yibum was the one who's now the divorcee. The kinsa hamigaresh. So the man who divorced his wife, and his wife was one of the sisters of the third brother. So he, at that point now, picks up a second wife. So the first wife that he had was the sister of his brother's wife, but he's no longer married to her. And now he's married to a different woman, the woman who was married to the third brother, but she wasn't related to anybody prior to that. Umeis zu. Umeis, and now this brother dies. So this brother was never simultaneously married to two women. He was married only to the one woman, and then divorced her, and then married to this other woman, and now he dies. Zohi she'amru. Now this is what the Mishnah goes on to say. It says, Zohi she'amru she'imeisu nisgarshu tzarasehan mutaros. That's the brother who's still alive is allowed to marry in Yibum, is allowed to do Yibum with his brother's wife, because Because we don't consider her a tsaras erva. That's what tsaras erva would it be? Well, we're talking about the brother now who was married to the sister of the woman that this brother just had earlier divorced. So here's the point. The point is that my brother was at no time simultaneously married to my relative, meaning my wife's sister, and also the other wife. He was only at one time married to my wife's sister and no longer married to her, and then married the other sister-in-law. And so we're being told that I'm allowed to do yibum with this woman because that's the rule that he's no longer married to my relative. So the point of this being that the example that was given was that my brother was married at one time to my relative, stopped being married to my relative, and then picked up a second wife, and now we're discussing what's the status of yibum with the second wife. And we're being told that you can do yibum with her. But why does it give such an example? It doesn't give the straightforward example of tsaros, which are contemporaneous tsaros, which means that it's an actual bigamous marriage where they're both simultaneously his wives. If that's also true, and if the rule of this Garsha would even cover a case of simultaneous wives, and by divorcing one, even while married to the other one, that would be enough to release the problem, the objection of Yibum from the other one, it should have given that example. Why did it have to give the example of what's called, here's what the Gemara kind of spells it out. Tama de Giresh v'achar kach kanas. The Mishnah seems to be giving the case only that he first divorced the one sister, the wife who was the sister, v'achar kach kanas, and then afterwards marries the other woman. Aval kanas v'achar kach giresh. Lo. But if he married the other one, v'achar kach giresh, lo. If he was married to the second wife, and then afterwards divorced, you get the impression from the Mishnah that that wouldn't be covered by this heter. So that's all that we're objecting to. We're objecting to, it sounds from our Mishnah very clearly, that the rule of kulam imesu onis garshu will apply even in a situation where the brother was simultaneously married to both women. But the Mishnah later on, Adaf Nun, sounds like it's not going to apply in that case. It would only be if they're serial marriages. So, Rabbi Yirmiya, Tavra, Mishashana Zulo, Shana Zu. Rabbi Yirmiya said, okay, that's how it goes. That these are the Samach Lokas. And our Mishnah holds one way, and the Mishnah later on holds the other way. The word Tavra is a little unclear. It's either supposed to be an insult, or it's supposed to be an acknowledgement of irreconcilability. Either way, Rabbi Yirmiya says there's no way to reconcile, and so one opinion on Daf Beis is against the other. Tanaim about what happens if in a bigamous case where the brother divorced the relative before he died, can you do yibum with the remaining wives? And that's what Rabbi Yirmiya says. It's a machlokes between these mishnayos. Hi, Tana Savra Misama Pelas. Our Mishnah on Daf Beis holds that Misa Mapelas, that everything is determined at the time the brother dies. And since at the time that he died, he's no longer married to my relative, so I can do Yibim on the other women. The Hai Tana Sovereign Isu and Harishodim Appealim. The other Tana Daf Nun holds that the fact that they were even while married, we label the woman as Tsara Serva, and we can no longer do Yibim for that woman either. That's what Rabbi Yirmiya holds. And Rava Amar Liolam Chad Tanahu Vizuvain Tsarach Lomer Zukatani. Rava Amar Liolam Chad Tanahu. Rava says, no, it's not a machlokes, it's just our inference from what was going on the Mishnah Daf Nun is wrong. And that it gave an example that was a pshita. It gave an example that was pashut, but it didn't mean to say that that's the only situation where you'll permit Yibum. It gave the kind of the simple, the clear example of Yibum in the case where the relative is no longer married to my brother, and so, but not to be understood, Zuva ein sarach lomar zu katani. Like it goes without saying And then it goes and says, what goes without saying, that even if the marriages weren't simultaneously, well, certainly that certainly if the marriages were not simultaneous, you can do yibum for the woman that he's currently married to. In any case, according to Rava here, so it's a machlokas amarayim, whether it's at all even any opinion among the Tanayim that a simultaneous marriage to a relative and somebody else would preclude that somebody else from Yibum. But either way, our Mishnah was very clear that even if the brother was simultaneously married to two women, one was my relative and the other was not, and then the marriage to my relative dissolved, either because she died or because they got divorced, then at the time my brother dies, he's not married to my relative anymore. And so that'll just be an ordinary Yibum case, and we ignore the fact that at one time he was married to a relative of mine. Okay, two dots. The Mishnah goes on to say, any case where the wife could have done Yibum, Miyun, again, we're talking about a little kid now, Velo Miyana, but she didn't do Miyun, then you have to do Chalitza. Okay, so again, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about a case of, and my brother was married to a girl who's not yet bat mitzvah, and that's why she's yechola lima ein. She would be able to refuse the marriage, to annul the marriage, which is, again, only a prerogative of pre-bat mitzvah girls. She calls she yechola lima ein velo miyana, but if she didn't exercise that prerogative, she didn't do miyun, and so she remained married to my brother, and then he died, and so then what's the rule? So then you have to do chalitza. That's what it says in the Mishnah. So then our Gemara says, well, Vitma ain't hashta. Well, why does she have to have chalitza? Why can't we just encourage her to do miyun right now? And if she does, Vitis Yabeim, let the other wife, the issue here has to do with the other wife, call she yechola lema'ein, so that'll annul the marriage. And then the other wife of my brother would be eligible for Yibum. So why do we say that if the girl did not do miyun, but could have done the miyun, so then in that case we'll insist on chalitza for the other wife. Why? Why don't we just tell this one to do miyun? The miyun being, she makes a declaration in front of the Beis Din that she rejects her husband, at this point her dead husband, so vitis yabeim, and that the other wife do yibum because there was never a co-wife there in the first place, because the miyun annuls retroactively the marriage. So that seems to suggest that this Mishnah is following the policy of Rabbi Yoshia. Now, Rabbi Yoshia was saying the following. This whole concept of miyun is peculiar. You know, obviously, we don't really have it in our world. But the concept is that when the girl is married while she's not yet bat mitzvah, because let's say it's better for her. Obviously, that's what the family is doing. They're trying to take care of her. So the family, the father has the prerogative to do it, and the Torah would recognize that marriage. But when the father is not doing it, other relatives might want to step in and encourage her to marry or make arrangements for her to marry some guy, some kid. So the point is that that they feel that that's in her best interests. And if they do that, then the rule is, since the marriage is not recognized by the Torah doesn't give anybody other than the father the prerogative to make his daughter, his unbat mitzvah daughter, married. But if the family does step in, the Chazal did create that provision, and they did put in this peculiarity that they'll allow for the annulment if the girl wants to annul. That's miyun. And so what happens when the marriage is a kind of a weak marriage in the first place? If it's a weak marriage in the first place, so then that's what we're discussing over here. Can there be miyun in a situation of a weak marriage? Now, we would think that it's obvious that you can do miyun on a weak marriage since you can do miyun on a strong marriage. But what are the examples of a weak marriage? So one of them is what's called Zika. And Zika refers to, let's say, when the husband dies and now she needs Yibum. So at the point that she needs Yibum, she has a Zika to the brothers. which means that she has a certain kind of a connection to the brothers that's a pseudo-marriage connection, which disallows her to marry anybody outside of the brothers. But on the other hand, she still needs to become fully married, and this Zika is broken with chalitza. You don't use a divorce, you do a chalitza procedure. So when she's in that state, that's a Zika relationship. And then what the Chazal said is that they, before you get married fully with Yibum, before you do Yibum, the Chazal insisted that you do a regular ring ceremony. A ceremony that we do like when we get normally married. When you get normally married, the groom gives the ring to the bride, and then they're married. And then they have chuppah and yichud and all of that. But it starts with the ring. So when it comes to yibum, there's no provision. The Torah doesn't give you that option. The Torah says only yibum. Yibum is the ma'ase bia. Is Tashrish Amita is the only way that you can accomplish Yibam as far as the Chumash goes. But the Chazal know that that's a pretzis, obviously, so they don't want that to be the way this marriage is going to get launched. So they insist that he first give her a ring. That's called Ma'amar. That's regular Kiddushin. So it says here that what happens in the situation of when there's a Zika, when there's a Yavama situation, before the brother does Yibum, they are in a state, a semi-married state of Zika, and then when the brother gives her a ring to be married, that's called Ma'amar. So then they're in another semi-married state, which is recognized by the Chazal, but not by the Torah, a Drabanan marriage. So here's what it says. Rabbi Oshia holds that her Miyun is effective only when she's married after Ma'amar. Mima enes la ma'amaro. Ve'ena mima enes la zikaso. But she can't do miyun if they're still in the Zika status. Before Ma'amar. And that's a little bit what it sounds like from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that if the girl could have done miyun but didn't do miyun, then we insist that the other wife do chalitza. Well, why don't we just tell this girl do miyun now? So presumably that's because we can't let this girl do miyun now, because Rav Oshia says that they didn't provide for that that situation, only after Ma'amar. Okay, then the Gemara doesn't want to accept that as being the implication of our Mishnah. It says, no, well, hold on a second. Maybe there's a different thing going on here. It's like this, really, we could have, as far as the regular rules would go, we ought to have been able to say, do miyun now. Annul the first marriage, and then the other girl could do Yibum. But we're concerned about something, because having been married to the guy until this point, and now the guy dying, and we're now facing a prospect of Yibum, the Gemara says, well, doing Miyun now, which will be effective, but it's a little mysterious, and it will seem as if this was almost as if chalitza had already been done, and therefore we can't be as free with what we're going to allow the other wife to do. Let's see. So it says here, the Gemara says, lo, tzaras erva shani. No. There's a reason why we don't allow the miyun right now, which is because what is it going to look like? The tani Rami Bar Yecheskel, because in a similar situation we have the following thing going on. Rami Bar Yecheskel presented the following braisa. Miyana bebaal muteres liaviv. If a girl who is not yet bat mitzvah is married to this guy, and then she does miyun, and then that relationship then was over, annulled, and was retroactively canceled, so she was never married to this guy. So it says here, muteres liaviv. She's allowed to marry this guy's father. It's not going to be a violation of kalaso. A man is not allowed to marry the girl that his son was married to. But his son was never married to her because she annulled that marriage. And so miyana beba'al muteres liaviv. But what happens if the son died? And now we're discussing yibum, and she now does miyun to the yavam. So that annuls everything, and it should be the same exact thing. But no, asura liaviv. No, the Rami Bar Yecheskel quotes from this braisa that no, she's not allowed to marry her dead husband's father because that looks too much like that first marriage was an official marriage. Alma Misha Asnafila Niris Kikala So. When the husband dies and she had been married for him for his whole life, essentially, until he died, things are now they're too permanent. They're too fixed. And so we're not going to allow the annulment to erase the whole first marriage because it looks too much like that was established. Like there's no indication that that first marriage was ever canceled. And therefore, we don't permit, like for Maris Ayin, we don't permit her to marry her father-in-law. So, Hachanami, Mishas Nefila, Niris Kitzaras Vito. So, same thing, after he dies, we're not going to allow her to do miyun and annul that first marriage to the extent of allowing the other wife to marry the brother. It's like a marisayin. Okay, that was the end of that whole first Mishnah and its Gemara. Second Mishnah, here we go. So we had been listing so far the 15 incestuous relationships that the brother is allowed to marry the woman, but when he dies, I am related to his widow. So that's why there's a situation, there's halacha that I can't do yibum, and I also don't need chalitza, and we have no relationship, and there's no marriage to the tzaras either, according to Beis Hillel. Well, we're going to see in a second. Sheish of Arayos, the Mishnah says, Chamuros me'elu. There are six additional relationships that are different from those first 15. They're chamuros me'elu. They're kind of a tighter relationship. Mipnei shenisuos li'acherim. Because, and then here it's a little bit unclear how to read these words. Nisuos li'acherim. Sarasehan mutaros. Nisuos li'acherim. Rashi takes nisuos li'acherim to mean that they can only marry other people. And therefore, if my relative is married to these other people and they die, co-wives have no connection to me at all, and I could marry any of the co-wives at any time. That's, of course, not true only about these six, but about any of the other relationships. The point is, what's different about these six arayos, which we're going to say in a second, is very simply this. It's that it's not possible in these six new cases that we haven't mentioned yet that I could be related to the woman in any of these six ways, but yet my brother be married to her. So you'll see, as we go through this list, whatever the relationship is for me, it's the same relationship for my brother, and therefore my brother could not be married to any of these women, and because he couldn't be married to any of these women, there's never any discussion of Tzaras Erva, because there can't be a discussion of Yibam at all. So let's see. So it says here, Mipnei shenisuos li'acherim tzarasehan mutaros. The way the Rambam said, I think, is more appealing. It means that if my brother tried to and was in an illicit marriage with any one of these women, that marriage isn't recognized, in which case then any of the other wives have perfectly. So who are these six? Emo, his mother. And we've already encountered the discussion of Emo previafim ago. We already saw a few dafim ago possibly that maybe he could be married to my mother if that mother is not my father's wife. So that was a whole discussion about whether the prohibition against marrying a stepmother would even apply to a Anusas Aviv. And we said that this Mishnah takes that view, that Anusas Aviv is not permissible to any of the children. Kveishas Aviv and my stepmother. V'yachos aviv, and my father's sister. In other words, the point being that if this woman is my father's sister, then he's also my brother's father's sister, because we're talking about brothers for Yibam is always paternal brothers. And so by definition, what's my sister, my father's sister, is of course going to be my father's... Hang on here. Okay. All right, so in any case, my father's, the relative my relative, the woman is related to me because of a connection with my father, is going to be the same connection as my brother. So if I can't be married to her, my brother couldn't either, in which case there's no discussion of Tzaras Erva. So that's what these six are. Mother, stepmother, aunt, meaning from the father's side, Achosa Me'aviv, sister from the father's side, Eshes Achiyaviv, sister-in-law from the father's side, and Eshes Achiv Me'aviv. I mean, the other one was aunt on the father's side, and Eshes Achiv Me'aviv, and sister from the father's side. So, okay, that's pretty straightforward, clear, and obvious, and nothing really to add on that Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah says something that's really astonishing, which is that all along we had been assuming that the rule of Tzaras Erva, that you can't be married, you can't do Yibam or Chalitza to the woman who was married to the brother along with the relative who was married to the brother. That's called the Tzaras Erva rule. That we assumed was just a fact, but now we're being told that's a machlokas. Beis Shammai matirin at Tzaras Liachim. Beis Shammai permit you to do Yibam with the Tzara. In other words, Rabbi Shammai actually deny the whole rule of Tzara Serva. So all along, for the first 12 dafim, we had been assuming that Tzara Serva is not allowed to have Yibam. Beis Shammai, we're being told over here, say that's not true. There's no reason why not to marry Tzara Serva. The reality is that we would be sympathetic to Beis Shammai Shita on this one, that we would have said, kind of on our own, that there's no objection to marrying Tzara Serva. She has no relationship to you, and it's the same as any regular Yibum case. But in any case, Beis Hillel disqualify not just the Erva, but the Tzara Serva, as we've been saying all along. Beis Hillel Osrim. So now at Amud Beis, the Mishnah plays through what the consequences of those two policies are. So what happens if, let's say, Chaltu, if they did Chalitza? So again, according to Beis Shammai, that wasn't required. Either Yibam or Chalitza are required for the Tzaras Erva. And according to Beis Hillel, it's meaningless. So that's what it says in the Mishnah. Beis Shammai, Poslin min HaKahuna, uBeis Hillel Machshirin. Now, we're not exploring the actual Maisa Chalitza itself. The question is, having done Chalitza, what are the status changes that come as a result of Chalitza? If you do chalitza to a woman, she was married, her husband died without children, and she had chalitza from one of the brothers. What status change happens to her? The rule is that midrabanan, the chazal say that we have to treat her like she's a divorcee, and she's not permitted ever to marry a kohen. A chalitza is not allowed to marry a kohen. So Beis Shammai poslim and akuhuna. So Beis Shammai say, well, this woman, who's the Tzaras Erva, the co-wife of the man who died without children, who his other wife is related to the brother who did Chalitza, that's the Tzaras Erva, that Chalitza was valid because she could have done Yibam if he had chosen. If they had chosen to do Yibam, they could have done Yibam. If they choose to do Chalitza, the Chalitza is valid. And so Poslim and Akahuna, Beis Hillel Machshir, Beis Hillel say there was no option of Yibam. There is no need for a Chalitza. The Chalitza is a fake. It's a farce, and therefore it doesn't make any status change on her. So Beis Hillel Machshirin. What about Nis Yabamu? What if they decided to do Yibam? Beis Shammai Machshirin. Beis Shammai say, that's great. That's the regular mitzvah of Yibam. And Beis Hillel, now, what really they could have said here at this point is Beis Hillel could have said, what? That's not allowed. It's not tolerated. It's not recognized. It's the regular prohibition of sister-in-law, not b'makom yibum, because there's no yibum in a case of Tzara Serva. And therefore, Beis Hillel the reaction here presented in this Mishnah is, Beis Hillel could have said, that's terrible, we don't recognize the marriage, any children that they then proceed to have will be mamzerim, which is true. But they're focusing on her status, which is poslin. They'll say that even if that marriage ends, she has forever now become pasul kahuna because she has the status of zona. Zona means any woman who's engaged in any sexual relationship with any man that she is forbidden from marrying. And so that would include this case. And so that'll make her poslin. Now she wouldn't be allowed to marry a kohen in this case. But also the implications being that if she remained married to him and have children, the kids will be mamzerim. So now the Mishnah says, look at this. We have a machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel about a matter where people, according to Beis Shammai, will be disqualified for Beis Hillel. People, according to Beis Hillel, will be disqualified for Beis Shammai. It's theoretically a terrible situation to have. If the cases of Tzaras Erva became common, you would have commonly people who would be according Mamzerim according to one group, and Chalalim according to one group, and so. But this is what it says in the Mishnah. Look what it says. It says Afal Pi She'elu Osrim Ve'elu Matirin Elu Postim Ve'elu Machshirim. Even though we have Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had these two polar opposite views about Tzaras Erva that led to potentially statuses of Mamzerus, statuses of Chalalus that are subject to dispute. Lo nimne'u Beis Shammai melisa nashi mi Beis Hillel, velo Beis Hillel mi Beis Shammai. The Beis Shammai families did not object to marriages among Beis Hillel and vice versa on the grounds of a potential for Mamzerus there in the family or potential for Chalalus in the family because, as Rashi was explaining, because we would trust them to be sensitive to our views and to not mislead us into saying that this is a match that you can accept. Because we would trust them to say, well, no, in this family, they didn't have any cases of Tzaras Erva, so nobody here in this family will be subject to a psul according to your standards. And there's a lot of this trusting going on between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And then once we made that point, we're going to continue with the next point, which is, well, for that matter, any other machlokas in halacha, such as Tumavit Tahara laws, Kola Taharas Ve'atumos, Shehayu Eilu Mitaharin Ve'elu Mitamin, Lo Nimne'u Osim Taharas Eilu Agabi Eilu. There are many other machlokos between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about whether a certain kli is Tameh or Tahor, and knowing that, and it goes in both directions, and knowing that, we might say that if you're a Beis Shammai person, you have to stay away from any of the kelim of Beis Hillel and vice versa, because their standards are different from your standards. And so the halacha is, or that in the Mishnah anyway, it said that they did not avoid these interactions because they would be sensitive to each other's policies, and they would let them know if they're getting involved in something that required caution or not. That's the Mishnah. Now the Gemara. The Gemara here doesn't have anything to say about the first part of the Mishnah, about the six other relatives. It just jumps right into that issue of Beis Shammai suddenly holding that there's no rule of Tzaras Erva. So Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Shimon Pazi, my time of the Beis Shammai. Why did Beis Shammai deny the Tzaras Erva rule? So now the reality is, Tosas just points out, is that they didn't have to have a reason. They just could have denied the existence of the Tzaras Erva rule in the first place. We asked, really, you know, a few da'afim ago, we had to come up with a pasuk for the existence of the Tzaras Erva rule, and really, Beis Shammai just could have said, well, I don't hold of that drasha. But that's not really what's being said over here. What's being said over here is, my time at the Beis Shammai. Why would Beis Shammai deny the Tzara rule? Dechsiv lo siyeh eishes ha-meisa chutza le'ish zar. Okay, the context of this pasuk is that if the woman is married to the man who dies without children, lo siyeh eishes ha-meisa chutza le'ish zar, this woman, the widow, is not allowed to marry anybody outside of the family. She has to do yibum. That's what it says, Mishnah. That's what it says. The Gemara, the pasuk says, "Lo siyeh eishes chutza le'ish zar." She has to yibum. So listen to how this is being read. I don't know how you would have interpreted the words. "Lo siyeh eishes chutza le'ish zar." We know that means that this woman, eishes hameis, means the wife of the guy who died, is not allowed. "Lo siyeh chutza le'ish zar." She's not allowed to marry outside of the family. Instead, as the pasuk goes on, "Yivama yavova lehavi yibma." That's what the pasuk says. So listen to their interpreting the words here. It says, Chutza mechladika penimit. What does that mean? It means this. It means that we're using the word hachutza to mean to be an adjective of eishes hameis. Eishes hameis hachutza, which means the the woman, the widow, who is the outsider wife, the outsider widow. Lo tiyeshes amizachutza leish zar. The outsider widow, which means the non-relative widow, mechlal deika penimis, which means that there's an insider wife and an outsider wife. The insider wife is the one who's related to the brother. The outsider wife is the one not related. That's the tzara serva. And the pasuk says, v'yama rachmana lo siya, that she's not allowed to marry outside, which means that clearly the Chumash is exactly giving this explicit case, is that the wife, who is the non-relative, is not allowed to marry out. In other words, it's an actual rejection of tzara serva. And Beis Hillel, why did Beis Hillel say, don't they know how to read the pasuk that way? Miboy lehu lekid Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Rav Yehuda, minayin shein kiddushin tovsin biyavama. They learn the pasuk differently. They say, how do you know that you can't, that if the Yavama ignores the Yibam HaChalitza laws and instead just marries somebody that she wants to marry, that kiddushin is not recognized? How do you know? As the pasuk says, lo si, yeah. It means that she can't have a marriage. Havaya just means marriage. Lizar. In other words, it doesn't say the pasuk is saying that the outsider wife can't marry. It says any wife can't marry. Beis Shammai miksiv lechutz chutz aksiv. Beis Shammai, no, that would only be true if the word. Now we're going back and forth with a whole debate on how to interpret the psukim. Beis Shammai miksiv lechutz chutz aksiv. Doesn't say in the pasuk lo siya eishes hameis lechutz leish zar. It says hachutza, so it's an adjective. Who beis Hillel kiven eksiv chutza k'mand eksiv lechutz dami. Desanya, and now we have a very funny thing going on here. Everybody knows, even from when they're in first grade, how to read Hebrew, how to read Chumash. And you know that in the Chumash, when their word has a hey at the end, like where it says, Vayelech Harana. What does Vayelech Harana mean? It means Vayelech Lecharan. He went to Haran. Or Sa'aynecha Hashemayma. Or Yama Vekedma Bitzafon of an Egba. All of these are all, even first graders learn that a hey at the end is like a lamed at the beginning. But we're being now told this here from multiple brises, that this is the way the Chumash goes. So I don't really understand exactly what the state of mind is of these Tanayim that have to make a whole fuss about it, since it's just obvious Hebrew translations. But anyway, so we're being told here, Beis Hillel, they learn that the word hachutza is to be taken as le hachutz, lachutz, because desanya Rabbi Nechemia Omer, any word that would take a lamed at the beginning, the Chumash puts a hey at the end. And not only that, we have another braisa from Rabbi Shmuel to give examples. Kigon. Even though you could find your own examples, and there are thousands of examples, but we dig up a few. Kigon Eilim is Eilima, Machanaim is Machanaima. That pasuk doesn't even appear in the Chumash. Mitzrayim, Mitzrayima, Divlasayima, Yerushalayima, that's also not in the Chumash, Midbara, Ubeis Shammai. So now, don't Beis Shammai realize that the word hachutz just means lehachutz, and it's not just an adjective on Ishzar? Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, mina lehu. How does he know that rule about not having a kiddushin outside? Me leishzar nafka. No, that comes from the word zar. Ubeis Hillel. So we're back and forth. And that doesn't Beis Hillel know that ish zar is sufficient to make the drasha and not the word chutzah? Nami tepiglum ish zar. Gemara says, well, the truth is, yeah, that's true. In hachinami, that is so. In hachinami, yes. This is kacha ze be'emet. That is the way it is in truth. Chutzah lamali lirabos arusa. Okay, we backed out of the first interpretation or drasha that the Beis Hillel were making, which is okay, because these are all amarayim that are trying to reconstruct what the Tanaim were thinking. It's not the Tanaim themselves talking. So these are now. So then he said, okay, that's true. Yeah, the reality is that it must be a different drasha. The word chutzah, and oddly enough, we're going back to accept the word chutzah as an adjective. So eshes hamesa chutzah does mean the outsider wife. And what it's being told here is that Beis Hillel say Larabos Arusa, which means, let's say, my brother was only married to the girl with Erusin, and then he dies. And is there a Yibam in a case of Erusin? And Tosfos points out we have good reason to deny Yibam in the case of an Arusa, because the Pasuk says Asher lo yivnes beis achiv, and beiso zu ishto is not Erusin. That's only Nisuin. And so you need to have a Pasuk here to tell me that there's Yibam even from an Erusin marriage. The Gemara says, V'idach mei chutza ha-chutza. Okay, so then we turn to Beis Shammai, and we say, well, don't you know the Arusa rule? He says, yeah, that comes from the ha-chutza. V'idach, what about Beis Hillel? Chutza ha-chutza lo mashmalahu. They don't think that ha-chutza is significant to make a drasha. So now, at this point, in case you were following along, all of the loose ends have been tied off. We have a machlokis b'sham beis hillel about how to interpret the words lo siya ish yisameis ha-chutza li'ish zar. Beis Shammai say that means the outside wife. According to Rav Shimon ben Pazi. Rava is going to deny all this. And so therefore, beis sham beis hillel have machlokis about the tzaras erva. Rava amar, Rava says, throw that whole thing out. The reason for beis Shammai that they say that Tzaras Erva is Mutter is Tamayo de Beis Shammai de Ein Isser Chal al Isser. Because there's a principle that whenever I have one Isser in place and another circumstance comes that would create another Isser on that same object, that it cannot apply. Ein Isser Chal al Isser. Now, Ein Isser Chal al Isser is obviously explaining why, if my brother is married to a woman that I'm related to, I can't marry her. Because I can't marry her, but the other wife I could marry. Which Isser is the Isser that's not Chal? So Rashi tells you that the reality is he meant one way, but the next line of the Gemara we're going to think it's the other way, and we're going to reverse that in two lines. So it says like this. The thinking is that my brother is married to his wife, so then his wife is forbidden to me as a sister-in-law law. And then I go and marry the sister of my brother's wife. So now his wife becomes also forbidden to me on the basis of being my wife's sister. So that's a double prohibition. But ain iser chala liser. You can't have a double prohibition. So according to Beis Shammai, this is what Rava is suggesting according to the way the Gemara thinks. The reason why Tzaras Erva is Mutter is because when my brother dies, the reality is that my wife's sister is actually a permissible to me on the basis of being my wife's sister, and therefore it's not Tzaras Erva at all, the other wife. Einis Rechal Aliser. So the Gemara says, well, that only works in that peculiar configuration. That's only going to be true for a sister-in-law relationship, and it's only going to be true if my brother married first. But if I married first, lo asi yisir achos isha v'chayel al yisir eish esach. Ela nosachai v'achakach nosameis. But what if I married first, and then he married the sister of my wife? So then achos isha kodim. So now Rashi says, but the Gemara does a reversal and says, no, you misunderstood the whole Ein Isser Chal al Isser concept. Given the Lawasi Yisr Eish Esach V'Chayel Yisr Achos Isha, Havilei Tzara Serva Shel B'Mokam Mitzvah V'Sharia. Rashi explains what this line means, is that, no, we're not talking only about sister-in-laws. We're talking even about, let's say, Bas, even about a family relationship. If my daughter married my brother, what happens is, Ein Isser Chal al Isser, and therefore she never becomes my sister-in-law. She's always only my daughter and not my sister-in-law. And therefore when he dies, there's never any discussion of Yibum. It doesn't even count as Yibum. It's Shelo B'Mokom Mitzvas Yibum, in which case there's no rule of Tzaras Erva because it's Shelo B'Mokom Mitzvah. It's a kind of a convoluted concept because it means that Yibum only starts because there's a relationship of sister-in-law. And if we block the sister-in-law status, then there would be no Yibum rule. So that's a funny way to look at it, but that's the way Rava says that Beis Shammai are thinking of it, and Rava says that according to Beis Shammai, We don't even view the erva as being a yibum situation at all. And so that's why the tzaras erva is the only one where there would be any discussion of yibum. And so consequently, the tzaras erva would be mutter, according to Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel don't view it that way. Okay, then the Mishnah goes on to say, if chaltzu Beis Shammai poslim. Remember, now we've discovered that Beis Shammai Beis Hillel is about tzaras erva, the Mishnah goes through some of the implications of that machlokas. If chaltzu, if let's say that tzaras erva does chalitza, according to Beis Shammai, that was required. So, and according to Beis Hillel, that was meaningless. So the Gemara says, isn't that could have get out the implications on our own? Gemara says, le'apuket Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the Amar bo'u nesaket lehem litzaros she'yu choltzos v'lo misyabmos. Kamash b'lan de Beis Hillel machshirin. Yeah, it was pshita. There is one view among the Tanoim out there that we're going to encounter in the next daf. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri holds that because of this machlokas b'shan Beis Hillel and the problems that it arises, let's make public policy and insist that in all cases of tzaras erva, we should insist on chalitza, and that it would be valid. And we're being told over here, no, the Beis Hillel never adopted that policy, and that's why Beis Hillel Machshirin, they don't acknowledge the validity of that chalitza. Gemara says, Nisyabmu, Beis Hillel, the Mishnah goes on to say that if Nisyabmu, Beis Hillel poslim, the Gemara says, Hasu Lamali, why did I have to give that example? Isn't that obvious also? Mar says, well, that's true. It's so obvious that we didn't learn anything from it. We just did that. Aidi de Tana Chaltzu, Tana Nami Nisyabmu. We only presented that case because it's a natural continuance of the case of Chalitza. If they did Chalitza, here are the Yimachlokas, and if they do Yibum, then here's the Machlokas. But obviously, we didn't learn anything from that rule. Now, from this point on, the Gemara launches into an enormously important, but side, discussion about machlokos in general. That if this Mishnah presented a machlokos Beis Shammai Beis Hillel that had some pretty significant consequences to it, so we take this opportunity to discuss what is it like when the Jewish community has machlokos in matters of halacha, how do we view those machlokos? In other words, is that good or bad for, let's say, Jewish unity and unity of practice and conformity of practice? And so our Gemara now goes into... Let's spend some time. It's not difficult for the next few lines over here. It says, let's discuss this issue. Tanan Hasa. Okay, so we're in a tangentially related discussion. Tanan Hasam. There's a Mishnah in Megillah, and we already learned this as part of our Daf Shavua. Megillah Nikres B'Achadasar B'Shneimasar B'Shloshasar B'Arba'asar B'Chameishasar Lo Pachas V'Lo Yoser. The Mishnah says, in the first opening Mishnah in Megillah, it says that there are different days that different communities can read the Megillah on the 11th, or the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, the 15th, not less than more, depending on circumstances. So now Reish Lakish, Amrli Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, I don't get it. Ikri kan losis go to do. Doesn't the Chumash disallow that type of splintering? Ikri kan losis go to do. Doesn't the Pasuk forbid losasu agudos agudos? You're not allowed to make clusters of Jewish communities where some people are doing things one way, some people are doing things another way. So the Gemara says, I don't know what you're talking about. Hi losis go to do, mi boy le legufe. No, the Pasuk doesn't mean don't make little communities. Doesn't it just mean don't tear out your hair over in grief over a mace? That's what the Pshuta Shel Mikra is. You can't tear out your hair in grief when somebody passes away. So then the Gemara says, no, that's not true. That's not all that's implied in this pasuk. The Amar Rachmana lo sa'asu chabura lemace. No, because imkein lema kra lo sagodudu. My lo sis go to do shmamina lahafihu diyasa. Lo sis go to do relates to the word aguda, not just gedida. Then the Gemara says here, well, hold on, maybe the whole pasuk is just telling me ve'ema kuli lahafihu diyasa. Well, wait a minute, you mean the pasuk is not saying anything about tearing out hair? No, it must be, because we had a brisa saying that that's what it means. Imkain lemakura lo sa go do. My lo sis go to do shmamina tarti. Point being that at this point we have established that the pasuk lo sis go to do, which is incidentally, I will point out, in Parshas HaShavua, so look for it. It's saying that not only can't you tear out hair in grief, but also you're not allowed to make yourselves sub-communities of Jewish practice. Lo sasu agudos agudos. So now we have the question. The question is, how do you explain the Megillah rule? So Amar Lei, Ad kan lo shanis makom shenagu lasos melacha biarvi psachem ad chatzos osim makom shenagu shelo lasos einosin. Well, why didn't you raise the objection in Psachim when we talked explicitly about how there are some communities where they do things one way and other where they don't allow melacha on Erev Pesach, and some communities where they do allow melacha on Erev Pesach? Amar Lei, he said, well, I'm not going to be bothered by that. Aminu lacha ana isura. I am telling you something that's a matter of halacha, and you're pushing back with something that's really a minhag question. I'm telling you something that's an iser. D'amar Rav Shimon bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan l'kaimes yimei ha'purim ha'ele b'zmanayhem, zmanim harbei tiknu lahem. It's like this is quoted from Rabbi Yochanan, so he's throwing this Rabbi Yochanan statement back at him. He's saying, but you said yourself that this is a halachic objection to cross lines. It's not just a minhag. But the yat amartni minhaga. But you're asking me, why didn't I object when we learned about the makom shenahagu, which is a minhag thing? So at this point, we're going to stop. And the point that the Gemara is presenting here is it's a critical issue having to do a lot about unity of halacha and about what to do about splintering communities in Klal Yisrael. And the very first ground rule that we're being told here is that it doesn't seem to bother me that there are minhagim, that one community is different from another. It's only when there are halachic shitos, where there are halachic rulings that are different from one community to another, that's going to trigger this whole objection of the chumash of losis go to do. And so you can see where it's relevant to our Mishnah, the Beisham Beisil Machlokes in halacha, and we'll have to pick up from here next time. Okay, everybody.